Hello, everybody. It's 5:30 in the morning over here in Tehran, where Press TV is. You're watching us live. Well, polls have closed in a number of U.S. states as Americans voted in midterm elections. It will take hours before a full picture emerges of how the legislative branch of the U.S. will look, but so far, 8 Senate races have been decided. Over 100 House of Representatives seats have also been accounted for. The Democrats and Republicans are neck and neck in the House tally. Opinion polls show the Republicans maintain control of the Senate but lose control of the House to Democrats. Meanwhile, rights groups say in at least 12 states, faulty equipment prevented citizens from voting. Critics say the restrictions are intentional because of the high turnout, which is expected to vote Democrat. The Department of Homeland Security has dismissed the allegations. To discuss this issue a little bit further, I'm joined by guests from both Tehran and, of course, Minneapolis. Out of Tehran, we have Mariam Babakhanian. She is a Press TV journalist. And out of Minneapolis, I'm going to be joined by Jack Rice. He's a former CIA officer and is joining us via Skype. Thank you very much to both of you for joining this broadcast. I'm going to begin with Mr. Jack Rice, and perhaps what's best to start with asking him about how he sees the turnout and how does he actually receive this midterm elections. Mr. Jack Rice.
Well, thank you so much. It's really interesting watching the races right now as the midterms, and you look at all of these votes in the House and the Senate across the United States, what we really can determine right now is that this really is a reflection of how generally the Democrats and the Republicans see Donald Trump. And you're seeing this reflection in terms of the vote process everywhere from Florida and the southeastern part of the country all the way up into the Northeast as it works its way across the country. What we know right now is this: for the Democrats to take back the House, they need to essentially take back, win 23 House seats that are now currently controlled by Republicans. They need to take back at least 2 Senate seats to take control of the Senate. Now, some of the early polling has told us that at this point, it looks reasonably good, although you never technically know, that the Democrats may be successful on the House side, likely less so on the Democratic side. But I think what's significant here is you can look back at the polling back in 2016 that continued to say that Hillary Clinton was going to win the presidency. And we found that those simply did not reflect reality and that Donald Trump was actually able to succeed. So with that in mind, we watch the polls with a lot of skepticism right now in the U.S.
Okay, let's bring in Mariam Babakhanian out of Tehran to ask her opinion. Well, first of all, about this whole election. And of course, one question for her would be, how does she see the future of President Donald Trump's presidency, basically, if the House is won by the Democrats? Mariam.
Well, as your guest said, the Democrats need only 23 House seats to take over the House of Representatives. And if that happens, then the Democrats will have extreme power to do a whole lot of damage to President Trump and the 2 years that he has left of his presidency. First of all, they can start impeachment process against him. Of course, that would need two-thirds of the Senate's approval, which they will not get. But still, they can stall many of President Trump's the things that he plans to do. For example, they can stop the funding for the wall that he wants to build. They can start investigations into his tax returns, which he still hasn't disclosed. They can start investigations into the recent murder of the Saudi journalist and why President Trump has been so keen to downplay that issue. So the Democrats can do a lot of damage if they win the House. But as your previous guest said, it's going to be a bit of an uphill battle for them to take back the Senate.
Okay. Let's move on with our discussion about this whole thing. Our next question will be to Mr. Rice in Minneapolis. Of course, Mr. Rice, so far as I'm concerned, this election is very much characterized by polarization. Some say this is the most polarized election that they have seen. To what extent do you agree to that?
Well, I agree completely. I can look back in my lifetime, and I've never seen anything quite like this. You can look back at previous elections, and we can take you back 40 and 50 years, and we saw some attack ads that have come out that have been really, the only word is racist. But you look at a recent ad that came out by President Trump that I think even Fox News refused to play. It really highlights the willingness of this president to really fire up his base and to try to exclude as many people as possible. And that simply seems to be the strategy that has worked. But as I look at where we are right now, and you look what's going on, I have to defer back to the answers from our other guest. She's absolutely correct. I think the real issue that's what we're really looking at right now is the potential for the Democrats to take back the House is that they can actually open up investigations. They have the ability to put this president on the front burner, if you will. It's reminiscent of what the Republicans did when they took back the House in 2014, and they did the exact same thing to President Obama the last 2 years of his presidency. And so it's really significant. I personally doubt we will see an impeachment hearing unless you see Robert Mueller and that investigation come back with something substantial, because everybody is already looking at the 2020 presidential elections. And we saw what happened even with Bill Clinton years ago, where there were impeachment efforts being made and he turned around and he won the presidency again. And I think that's what the Dems are thinking about right now. It's about right now, the next 2 years, but also about the presidency in two more.
Well, let me just pose the same question to Mariam in other words. Mariam, of course, you were discussing how polarized this is. And as Mr. Rice says, you know, he hasn't seen any polarized election, as so much polarized, actually, as the Karen one. Want to get your comment on that as well, you know, especially bringing in to light the fact that polarized in a sense that it has also been very much characterized by racial issues as well, Mario.
Well, I believe that President Trump just feeds on this fear factor on dividing the country, polarizing the country, pitting different races against each other. I think this is one of the tactics that very successful, actually, tactics that he's been using. Even when he was a candidate, remember, he's called Mexicans rapists. He's called, remember the rally in Charlottesville when white nationalists had a rally, and he came out and said there were good people on both sides, and this is while on the other side they were Nazis and, you know, alt-right nationalists, white supremacists. That's the way you can characterize them. So I think President Trump uses this tactic to pit Americans against each other, to scare them off each other in his own advantage, so that he can advance his agenda. But what was interesting to me today is that when I was reading some of the articles, most Americans had come out and said that the most important factor in the elections today was healthcare, something that President Trump really hadn't paid attention to. And he did everything that he could to repeal Obamacare, actually. And then yesterday he came out saying, oh, if you vote for the Democrats, well, the Democrats are going to repeal Obamacare. So every time he sees something not working for him, and not when he's not able to pit the people against each other, he just switches sides. He switches the narrative, and this is how he has become successful in becoming president, I think. Mm-hmm. And but I doubt that he will be able to continue for much longer, especially if the Democrats take
of course,
the House back.
Mariam, that's a very interesting point that you just touched upon. Let's put the same question to Jack Rice in Minneapolis. Of course, Mariam in Tehran. Jack, we're speaking about the issue of Obamacare and peeling it off, and the fact that President Trump says no matter who wins the election, they're going to do the same. But to what extent do you agree?
Well, if we think about where we are right now, especially in the coming 2 years, if the Democrats are capable of taking back the House, that will essentially stymie President Trump in any of his efforts in the future, because you need to get both the House and the Senate side to pass any legislation in place. And I think you're going to see the Democrats fight him at every and all levels. So that's going to be a big part of this. But I do think when we look at some of the recent polling on what Americans are really concerned about, we know that the president has focused primarily on immigration because it's a way to scare people generally. And we have seen that that's what he has done. Nevertheless, we find that the two major issues that Americans are concerned about are health care, and that continues to be an issue. And then who's in the White House and the presidency. So you look at those, and I can tell you personally, I just received notices in the last 30 days, my health care is going up another 15% this year. And this happens year after year after year. And I'm common. In fact, my numbers are low sometimes compared to others. And so there are a lot of people who look at this as a pocketbook issue. It's not even a philosophical question. It's not even a political question or a political allegiance. It's actually about money that I have to pay. And why aren't we addressing that issue? And that this president, meaning Trump, made this argument against President Obama. But the problem is he hasn't particularly addressed the issue himself. And so people are starting to, I think, lose faith who might have voted for him because they're voting for the pocketbook issue of health care.
Right. Let's move on to another issue right now. The other thing that has been in the news regarding the recent elections in the U.S. has been vote suppression. The fact that there have been irregularities in the course of the elections. And, you know, it's very interesting because one may well ask that, you know, what does that mean for a country like the United States, Maria?
Well, there it's actually very interesting because in some states, rights groups were reporting that in actually at least 12 states, there was voter suppression reported to them. Like, for example, in Tennessee, they didn't have electricity. And in Georgia, the voting equipment did not work. They were saying that they did not have the cables to start the voting, the ballot boxes where the people were supposed to go and vote. And considering a country like the United States, and everybody knew that the elections were going to be on November the 6th. I mean, the preparation, there would have been some preparation done. How could they be missing electricity cables for such an important day? And there were actually images of people voting in the dark in Tennessee, one of the key battle states in both the House and the Senate. So rights groups were saying, some might say that this is actually valid, that they were doing this on purpose so that voters just aren't able to vote, because most voters this time round are young voters, And as we know, young voters are not satisfied with the way the country is being handled. They are not happy with President Trump and his policies. They want change. So there was this sense that this was being done on purpose to prevent some people from voting.
Okay. Of course, I think, you know, well, that very much actually brings begs the questions of fair elections in America, Jack Rice, doesn't it? To what extent do you believe that if we have even reports of irregularities, that will bring the issue of fair elections under question in America?
I think Americans are very sensitive when it comes to the issue of vote suppression, and rightfully so. We have to go back and look back through the civil rights era and before. What we have seen, particularly in the South in the United States, was a never-ending issue to suppress the vote of the African-American community. The purpose was very specific, to exclude them when it came to poll taxes, when it came to education issues, when it came to identification, for a whole series of reasons. And this has continued really to the current day. We even find the likes of President Trump, and he did this again and again and again during the last election process, talking about how there was all of this fraud in the election process for one simple purpose, and that was to actually make it harder for people to vote. Not actually easier, but harder. And if you look back historically, what we have seen consistently is that the Democratic Party has generally, I don't see this from a direct perspective, meaning I'm not supporting one or the other in this context, but the Democratic Party has always tried to get as many people as possible to vote. And regularly over decades, we've seen the Republican Party work harder and harder to exclude some of those people. And frequently the people they've tried to exclude or are those who may likely have voted to the opposing party. The problem is that what we need to be doing in the U.S. or anywhere in the world is to make sure that everybody has that opportunity to vote, that that vote actually counts, and that it's a legitimate vote count itself. I have seen this when I've worked in the U.S. I've seen this in the Middle East a lot. I've seen this in parts of Africa where you get vote suppression or gerrymandering or an effort to actually destroy votes or to change vote counting. If you don't have a legitimate system in place, the real problem ultimately is that you undercut the ability and the willingness of people to vote itself, which undercuts the concept of it in the first place. And I think that's why it's so critically important in the U.S. and, frankly, anywhere else in the world.
Thank you very much. That's Jack Rice, former CIA officer out of Minneapolis, with those comments. He joined us via Skype. Thank you. And out of Tehran, we had Mariam Babakhanian. She is with Press TV. Thank you very much for joining this broadcast.
Thank you.